You're listening to Real Talk on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
You're on Reality Check Radio, Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. Good morning, good morning. Can you call someone a friend that you've never really met and have only sort of talked on Zoom? I think you can, because friends is something you feel, isn't it? And I'm here to introduce my wonderful friend, Christine Smith, who describes yourself as a homeschool podcaster. Good morning, Christine.
Good morning, Rodney.
And you're still in England.
I am. We're winding up a three-month trip.
Is it your first time to England?
No, been here twice before, and we do enjoy it. We really appreciate the history of the country. Mm. You know, most of our heritage in New Zealand comes from there, so we do feel very much at home, with a particular interest in just the history of it and what makes us what we are.
I've mentioned this before, but your husband wrote a beautiful book on Christian apologetics, which I know what that means now. And it was deeply influential to me because it was so deeply intellectual and deeply thoughtful. And every word that he wrote was carefully chosen. You could feel it as you read the book. And so that also makes me feel a special bond with you because, it had a big impact on me. So thank you for that. Thank your husband for that. But we're here to talk about homeschooling.
Yes.
And you're a podcaster. By the way, for mums and dads, nana and granddads and the interested, how do they find your podcast?
It's on YouTube.
Yes.
It's called Coming Home, Survive and Thrive in Homeschooling.
There you go. Coming Home, Survive and Thrive in Homeschooling. And they could just search that on YouTube and up you would pop in all your glory. We talked about what we're going to cover, and it's what you describe the macro and the micro, the big and the small of homeschooling. Walk us through what that means for us.
Sure. The macro would cover your why, your underlying reasons for homeschooling. The micro would be the nitty-gritty of how you go about it, which would include what curriculum you choose. And I suspect that many homeschoolers, once they've decided to homeschool, then just skip straight to the how are we going to do it.
Mm.
Whereas I feel it's more, it will serve you better if you thoroughly drill down and very carefully spend time in working out your why. What are your purposes? Why did you choose to homeschool? And we can talk about that a bit more. But once you've done that why, all of the nitty-gritty, including the what curriculum you may choose and what other activities you want to do, that will all start to make sense and almost self-decide for you because you already know your why.
When you're thinking about this, I always think, but never do, but always think it's important to keep a diary of these things because you want to write down your why at the start and remind yourself of it. If you don't write it down, you just get busy.
True.
And when I homeschooled, I have to say it sounds I'm an expert, two terms, I learned such a lot. And I would, A, about my children, but B, about how to teach them and where they were getting foot tripped and how to teach. My mum and I would be on the phone trying to remember how you did long division. And we were laughing and rolling around the floor, you know, like casting our mind back where you put the little digit number. And we had so much fun. And I'd love to have had a diary of that, but never did, you know, because you just do it. So I imagine writing down your why, what are the sorts of whys that people have?
Well, it could be one single reason why you've chosen to homeschool, or it could be a range. So, for instance, it could be, well, I want my child or children to have a good education. They're not happy with what they see going on in the school. Fair enough. That's a very basic statement. What does a good education look like? What does it include? What does it mean? Or maybe one of your whys is you want to protect your children more from what's going on in the schools. Well, what are you protecting them from? Be detailed. Write it out. What concerns you? Is it the gender and sex education, politics, how it's the education is so political? Is it critical theory? What is it that you're wanting to protect your children from? Following on from that, it's, well, when does that become too much protection? How do you balance that out with introducing your child at the right time to things in the world that they do need to know about? And as the parent, you're actually the best person to know when that is. And also, maybe one of your reasons was you want to prepare your child for the future, because many of the listeners on RCR will be very aware of what a global uncertainty we live in just now. And maybe they do want to be a bit more strategic about that. Well, what do you want to prepare for? Could it be things such as
World War III?
Yes. The politics. I mean, anything, taking all these conspiratorial things that we are supposed to love.
I'm down so every much. One of them.
I know. What is it, a 6 month head start or something? Or maybe it's more. I mean, it could include things like contrarian financials.
Yeah.
Including options of outside a traditional banking system. What does it mean to make an income by dividends? What about the CBDC? Do you need to teach your children about looking after themselves for food and clothing? Skills known to our ancestors for millennia, but often not known by the modern generation. Or do you want to prepare them for a community, the importance of being in a community? Mm. And also spiritual strengths. Do you want to prepare them for a better foundation in a faith? So it could be a combination of any of those, and there could be other reasons too.
I got a couple.
Go.
Critical thinking, not critical theory, the opposite, critical thinking, because and that determines how, like, not what to think, but how to think and reason and debate and argue. And then the other one I sorely miss with our kids is great literature. Do you know the beautiful books that they don't know about? And you meet anyone under, I'm going to say 40, and they haven't read the great books. I find that sort of staggering, because it might have irked you a little bit at school, having to study these. You only need to read them all. You just need to read one or two. And it changes your world, doesn't it?
It does, yes.
And now they don't get the time, and they don't have the attention to sit down with, well, if you're a younger kid, Tom Sawyer, Huckleberry Finn, and just read it. Swiss Family Robinson. So that is another one I'd be thinking about. We're just finding the time to sit down and even read out loud, read to them a beautiful book. Alwyn Paul, who's an educator, and he said to me, you should read them a book. And I did. And it was so wonderful to sit with your kids and read to them. Anyway, that's part of my macro.
Well, I'm pleased you've said that, Ronnie, because reading very good books was the core foundation to our educational approach. We use the Charlotte Mason educational principles, which are based pretty much on very good literature. They're called living books or whole books. Mm. So when you go back and we choose our why, your purpose, why are you homeschooling, let's say we draw a mind map. You know, you're familiar with that, where you put you write down your main words. So let's say we're going to say you want a good education for your child. So you write that in the middle of the paper, draw a circle around it. So now you've got those words in a bubble. And then start writing down little ideas of what does a good education mean. And it's like you draw a line out from that big bubble and you write down literature. And then you draw another line out from that, and you'd write down those books that you've just thought of. And then you might have another idea that says, well, you'd like to teach them history. So you draw that line out, and now you've got history. So you've still got your main idea, your why of a good education, but now you're starting to identify and peel back, if you like, the onion layers and get definitive, get details. And with that little mind map, you could have those little bubble words just going out, out, out into little subcategories all the way out. Once you've got that, then you can draw yourself up a document if you want it. And one that would be not set in concrete for you, don't lock yourself into something. That's your starting homeschooling document, if you like, for your family.
And
that's the start.
That macro that we've just done is months and months of curriculum, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
You know, like you'd have arithmetic and literature and critical thinking and spiritual growth, religious understanding, understanding of character, all just mind mapping. And where we've come from in that sense of our heritage, you know, and that's what was so great about traditional history, which again is gone. I get it. So is that the macro done?
Pretty much. That's your start. It's defining why are you homeschooling? What's your purpose?
And to refer back to it when the days get tough.
Oh, absolutely. You're going to need this document on your struggle days. Because you're going to know. It actually serves good purposes because now you've got something written down. And it's a living, flexible document. You keep adding to it. Or maybe you decide, no, I don't want that. But so out it comes. And you it means you don't have to rethink it every time. You're going, now, what are we doing again? Why am I doing that? It also serves as something that is available to the Ministry of Education should you ever have to give account. That's why I like your idea of using a diary too. We used to just jot things down in, and you've just got something there to refer to all the time. So that is why you need that. That's your purpose. Your
tell
macro.
Me, tell me about your struggle days.
Have you, oh, you they're terrible.
Tell me about one.
But they're real because let me tell you a little story then. Sometime in the first year, I think, that we were homeschooling, I started to think that I was the only one. I was going to a couple of homeschooling support groups, and you'd sit around and you'd, you know, and all I'd hear was the good stories about how wonderful everything was for everybody else, and I'd be sitting there and going, am I the only one? I must be the only one because nobody else is saying anything. And I said to the group leader that night that I had actually decided that this wasn't
working
for me. Pardon?
To kill the children.
But I said, I'm going to stop coming because I'm the only one struggling with this. And she said, Christine, do you think you're the only one who has black days? And I said, well, yes, because I'm not hearing about them. And to her credit, that group leader apologized on the spot. And said that we did need to be more honest and more real. And from that day, part of what I do is that I am honest about that some days are difficult days. They're normal. There's nothing to panic about. It doesn't mean that this is evidence as to why this is not working and the children should be in school. They're just a bad day. Tomorrow's another day. So when you have a day like that, first of all, you realize it's okay to have a bad day. Secondly, you realize tomorrow is a whole new day. And thirdly, you go, okay, well, what are we going to do today? Maybe today is a really good day just to have a teacher-only day.
Yes. Mum's
put
day,
put a movie
Dad's day.
On. Or... yes, exactly. Go out to the park. Go out to the beach. Change your routine. Just do something else that's going to lift the mood. Or put all the school books away and get a beautiful literature book out and just snuggle up on the couch and read. It's your privilege as a homeschooling family to design your own curriculum and what your day looks like. But black days are very real, and chocolate helps.
Chocolate helps everything. I couldn't get over how unbusy my day became, because you spend so much time of your day getting kids ready for school, getting them to school, getting their lunch, going through the list that the school give of what they need for Tuesdays, right? And then you homeschool, and it's one-on-one. And literally in 15 minutes, you can cover all fractions. You know what I mean? And you think, oh, that's fractions done. What do I do now? And then the other thing I really got a shock about is how much the behavior of your children changes. So my children became so much better behaved over the couple of terms, reverted once they went back to school, I have to say. And then they also became very receptive to learning from me. But when they go to school and I say, oh, let's sit down and do some arithmetic. Nah. You know, they don't want to do it because that's school to them, not home time. Home time, I'm away from that stuff, Dad, you know. And, but my black days were, again, all on me, because what it taught me was patience. Oh, my goodness. Just the patience of being present with a child. Because bundling them off to school, you don't learn that patience. Let's go to the... Presumably the macro gets referred to and gets changed, can get changed as you go along, because the why can change. What's the micro now?
Okay. Well, the micro is now getting into what I like to call the nitty gritty, because now you've got your purpose, your mind map, all of your suddenly the good books you now know you want to include, the history, maybe you want the finances. So now you know what you want to do, how are you going to do it? And so rather than trotting off and choosing a box curriculum or whatever that may not meet those needs of what are now the priorities in your home, you can now go, okay, so now I need some really good books. I'm going to get these good books. How am I going to study these good books? What's the best way to do this? You can do something similar with maths. You've got your history. What else did you talk about? Critical thinking. Yes, absolutely vital. So now you know you need to include within your curricula at home some ways to help you do that. I don't think there would be many parents where that comes naturally to them, because it wasn't even in when we were particularly at school. We think it's bad now. You know, we didn't get it either when we were at school.
Didn't you really?
Critical thinking? No.
Maybe it's too big a word. It's this. It's simply that thing of asking why you think what you think of a kid, right? And I used to get that at school. So you'd say, oh, such and such. Oh, yes. Now, what's your reasoning behind that? And my mum would do it. I felt you'd literally play a game of rugby and you'd be, and they'd say, well, okay, you decided to run that way. Why? And I notice nowadays, everything is, no, when X, Y, Z happens, you do C. It's not the why. It's not the, it's not that free and easy working it out yourself, explaining yourself approach. We've made, maybe it's me overanalyzing it, but we've made everything a training manual. We've worked out how best to do this. This is how you do it. This is how successful people do it. And this is how you'll do it. And you do not question the method. Now, if you're drilling in the army, that's really smart way of doing it. And if you're learning to swim, This is how you learn to swim. But for so much of life, you also want them to, I'm sounding like a Willy Wonka that they have at school now where you, you know, student-centered learning, but you do want them to say, well, I thought about doing it this way because, and I'm thinking that Charles Dickens, when he was writing this, was meaning that. Well, why do you think he meant that? Do you know, just that questioning and establishing and learning to debate and discuss and have your ideas gently pulled to bits, gently questioned, without getting upset. Because now if you say to a young 20-something, well, why do you think that Israel's bad? Or why do you think climate change is such a fright? They just get angry.
Yes, because they can't. Well, usually when people can't respond with an explanation, that is a reaction.
But you see, you did have that critical thinking. I guess it's the wrong word. But you know that, but if I said to you, oh, well, why do you think homeschooling's a good idea? You wouldn't get in a huff. You wouldn't feel threatened. You wouldn't feel that your whole being is being questioned. You'd say, well, I think it's a good idea for these reasons.
Mm.
And then you and I would talk about that. I find that sort of lacking with people.
I think it is something that a child needs to be taught how to do instead of, I was just thinking as you were talking about that, I was thinking back through some of my education. Now, my primary school years were from mid-1960s onwards.
Oh, my goodness, you're so youthful. My high school years
were from 75 to 78. And I can remember I was a curious girl and I liked to ask questions, but I soon learned that it wasn't cool to do so.
Mm.
And I can remember being laughed at, you know, hearing the cool kids snigger from the back of the classroom when you asked a question and being too afraid to ask a question.
Yeah, because that was me.
The teacher might.
No one asked a question. I'm 5 years ahead of you. No one asked a question in school.
Mm.
Never opened your mouth, which is the opposite of what I've just been explaining, I guess. Never opened your mouth, but you were a receptacle where it was poured in the top and repetitive over and over and over. And you're just staring at it because I have a good memory. And so I'd get it and then it was over and over, not this stuff again and again and again. And then I daydream and then I get into trouble because I'm daydreaming. Okay, whatever. Tell me the micro. And so I've got to get to the micro. Tell me, actually, before we get to the micro, I've got a question for you.
Sure.
When I homeschooled, I refused to fill out any government forms. I used to be an Associate Minister of Education.
You rebel.
And I never filled out the forms because I thought, no, to hell with this. I'm not submitting to the idea that I need to justify to some idiot that given how the school's performing that I need to teach my kids myself. So my kids were listed in Canterbury as truant and there were 412 kids truant and I was being chased by some Maori trust, but all they did was email me and I just would, oh no, everything's cool. And they'd say, well, do you need help? No, I'm good. And nothing happened ever. So, and I looked at filling the forms out. Is that hard?
It's not hard, but to write an exemption, it's I used to joke and call it an epistle because there were pages that you had to write out. There was all of the legal things like just birth certificate, that kind of thing. But then you had to talk about, you had to give a lesson plan. How were you going to teach a lesson? How would you assess it? And how would you make any changes if necessary? You had to talk about the S word, socialization. You had to justify to the ministry how your child was going to be socialized because that seems to be Such a dysfunctional presumption. And so by the time you had done all that, it was pages. So for our first two, we did it both together because they both came home together out of school. They were the only two that went to school. And for the other three children after that, we literally cut and paste and just altered.
And presumably, homeschooling is such a thing now, there'll be templates that you could get that would guide you through that rubbish.
I would think that there would be, and I know that there are consultants out there too that can help those who struggle with doing an exemption to put one together. That being said, I do suggest, insofar as possible, the parent actually does that themselves. Homeschooling is a big commitment. So if you're struggling putting together an exemption, I think you're probably going to struggle with some other things within homeschooling too. So it's just better to buckle up, get what help you need, but get it done yourself so that you do
Don't
understand
follow my example.
everything. Yeah. Well, for me, I wouldn't have wanted the added stress of just not knowing when the boys in blue were going to come and tap on my door.
Oh, I had that pictured in my mind because
Did
this
you?
was the COVID era. And of course, we all became total renegades. And I imagined the boys in blue dragging me out of my home, right? And screaming at my wife, don't let these bastards teach our kids. Don't, whatever you do, I'll go to jail, but don't let them have our kids. Because I became such a renegade. And I thought that would be sort of quite funny, being arrested for trying to protect your kids from.
It's a strange kind of funny, but in some situations,
Yeah.
that would be literally what
So
you'd be arrested
that's a,
for.
and I can imagine that form being off-putting. So maybe you should try to start a little bit of homeschooling before you get to the form. Because it'll be a while before they catch up to you, the boys in blue. They've got a lot on their plate. And in my case, it was in Canterbury. It was a Maori trust, and it was very clear that I wasn't Maori, and the interest dropped away. And it was a clear case where they were being paid for following up. And once I'd done the requisite number of letters, I just dropped out of the system, and I was never bothered again. And I just kept saying, oh, everything's cool. That was 6 months. The next bit of the micro, what's that?
Okay, so we're heading back to the how. Actually, I'm just going to go backwards if you wouldn't mind and just address that. You just said that you don't need an exemption to start. That's actually true. You don't need to wait until your exemption is approved before you pull your child out of school,
No.
incidentally. You don't. So I'll just park that one there so that the listeners can know that that is your option. Okay, so choosing a curriculum. So now you know you've got a good idea of what it is in your house that is important to you for your children. Why are you home educating? And you've got all of the subject material and the ideas you want to pursue. Now you're going to find out how to fulfill that. So you can do it yourself. You can DIY if you don't feel confident to do that. And fair enough if you don't. You can buy a curriculum that will meet those needs reasonably well. So I mentioned I did the Charlotte Mason approach. When we were doing it, there was no curriculum you could buy. So we learned the principles of how to do it and then just applied it ourselves. So imagine my delight when part of what I find out here in the UK, when I tracked a Charlotte Mason girl down here and interviewed her, you can buy Charlotte Mason curriculum now. Oh joy. And I think that's just wonderful for the modern homeschoolers that want that approach. So but you don't have to buy it, an exact, you've got to have this and that, and then you've got to have this one. You can, as far as I know, work it out according to what you need in your family, or ask for their advice if you wanted to do that. So that's if you want to do the Charlotte Mason approach. And that
when you get the Charlotte Mason curriculum, say it's, I don't know, year six, you get the year six curriculum for Charlotte Mason. What is it? What is that? What is the curriculum? What is it?
Well, I haven't seen it.
Oh, okay.
I only know it's there.
But if you buy a curriculum, what you go through page by page with your child and it, the night before you read up on it, how does a curriculum work for a
homeschooler? Okay, so a curriculum, if you were going to buy it like that, you would have, let's say, we'll go with your Tom Sawyer, all right? Mm-hmm. Or the Little House on the Prairie. They're really quite big in homeschooling circles. So your curriculum there would cover reading X amount of chapters a day, asking the child to notice what was in there, because it's very much what does the child see and resonate with? What are they learning and reading and noticing about or hearing? Rather than you asking questions particularly about the script. That's a big difference between the Charlotte Mason approach and some other curriculums. So, for instance, that delightful scene where Huckleberry Finn, is it Huckleberry Finn or Tom Sawyer that manages that great bit of psychology and gets his friends to paint the fence for him?
Tom Sawyer.
Okay. So let's just say we're going to read that chapter there. Mm-hmm. A traditional approach would go, they would want to know what was Tom Sawyer doing, who gave him the job, how was he painting, how many friends were there, what did he do next? So you've got a list of questions that the teacher, if you like, or the writer has expected you to answer. And you would be judged or marked according to whether those questions were correct or not. Move over to a Charlotte Mason approach. The curriculum writer is going to ask the child, tell me about Tom Sawyer painting the fence. What do you remember he was doing? Mm. Talk to me about what you... So that it becomes a child's initiative. And it might be that the child really noticed the way that he was painting the fence, or that he was fascinated with how he convinced those children to do the job for him. But he doesn't notice whether they were boys or girls, or whether it was his father or his grandfather. So it's not a right or wrong. It's just what has the child seen in this, which is the
so
education.
So interesting, isn't it? It is so interesting. Yeah. I just love it because it's just, you just feel that. My kids write, like all kids, they write little stories and they say, oh, let me read you my story. And it's always shocking spelling and shocking grammar, right? But quite a sweet story. And I so learned and resisted because I can remember writing a wonderful story as a little boy and you take it off and then they say, oh, but you spelt that word wrong. And you just collapse. You've agonized, you know, to you, you've spent a lifetime writing the story. It was probably 15 minutes. And you just get picked about for spelling a word wrong. And I learned very quickly, to this day with my kids, I never correct their spelling unless they ask. Because it's crushing. And you realize in life that you all learn to spell good enough, right? It just comes with time. But what you lack is enthusiasm and imagination. And you take a little kid filled with enthusiasm and imagination and crush it because they spelled a word wrong. And yet, when we see grown-ups and we're wanting to know whether they're helpful to our little thing we're trying to do, it's not their spelling that we're looking at. It's their enthusiasm and their imagination and their thinking. And that's, again, a how, isn't it? That philosophy.
It is. because I don't care whether my child spells a word wrong. I want their ideas. I want what's going on in that amazing little creative mind of theirs. And if they have to stop and go,
how do I spell that word?
I don't know how to spell tremendous.
Yeah.
But I know how to spell good, so therefore I'm not going to be made to write this out, or I'm not going to be told off for it. I'm just going to choose good for my word. Yeah. How debilitating, crushing is a good word. It doesn't allow the blooming and the blossoming of that child's mind. Just get the ideas down. We can concentrate on that kind of thing later.
And that's a micro thing.
Yes. But it reflects a bigger macro, because your philosophy behind that is, again, what does this good education look like? So that's part of the philosophy of your homeschooling, is that it's vital to you in a good education that you want your child to be as uninhibited as they can in being able to explore the world, that their curiosity and their fascination with amazing words isn't debilitated, lessened because of some fear that they might not be good enough. So that belongs in your kind of philosophy of homeschooling, your big part. But the micro of it is the everydayness of it, is that just get me your idea. What's going on in that creative, gorgeous little mind of yours? We'll deal with the spelling on another day.
And is it true that you don't have to do this, start off with this great wide curriculum and cover off and tick all hundreds of boxes? Because to me, you could imagine just spending literally a term on Tom Sawyer and do almost nothing else, right? And that would be a better term than you could ever imagine having as a school child, what you'd learn.
So what have you got in that book, Rodney, that you would springboard out of for your children?
Everything.
What would you use?
Life. It's a book of life. And then, as you say, you could springboard off psychology, how to win friends and influence people, what it is to be a good person, what it is to be a bad person, what it is to persuade someone. You could do arithmetic. You could talk history. You could talk geography of the Mississippi River, everything. You could get a map out and look at the place. And you dive into that book, and that child would never forget Tom Sawyer, would never forget his adventures, would never forget mum or dad or nana or granddad spending that time with them on that book, and all that they learned about that world, and the time spent doing that, half an hour a day even, would be so precious in their mind compared to school.
And what have you done with that? You've given them a love of learning.
Love of learning.
The appreciation of what the gift of a good book is and what that is. I'm going to tell you a quick story about somebody that I interviewed here in the UK a few weeks ago. And he is a world-renowned specialist in C.S. Lewis, especially the Narnia series. It's Dr. Michael Ward, and his interview is going up on my podcast sometime this week. He wrote a book called Planet Narnia.
I've just seen it.
Oh, have you now?
Yes, because I have become an aficionado of C.S. Lewis, and I'm reading his, what's the one I'm reading now, is An Unlikely Christian, Surprise Christian.
Surprised by Joy?
Not his book. It's a book about him. I read books by him, but I'm reading the book about his conversion to being a Christian. And it was A Most Unlikely Christian, I think it's called. And I've been Googling books, and that one came up that you just described, Planet Narnia. And funny enough, this morning I was reading The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe.
Well, that's a happy coincidence. In Oxford, they have the C.S. Lewis Society. Now, it's open to the public, and every Tuesday in term time, somebody comes to the society and talks or lectures something in C.S. Lewis. And we've done it before, and we managed to do it three times this time. And Michael spoke on The Horse and His Boy. But so Planet Narnia, just very briefly for the listeners, unpacks the hidden theme in the seven books to being the medieval solar system, is that there was always some mysterious element as to what was the theme in C.S. Lewis's writing about it. And Michael Ward stumbled into this some years ago. After studying him for years, he's studied and taught C.S. Lewis for more than 30 years, and he wrote The Planet Narnia as a result. So what I was asking Michael was, how can you take the Narnia series and use it beyond reading the books, getting the child to narrate either written or oral, and watching the movie? What else can you do with this? And I realized as I was interviewing him, and I listened to Planet Narnia twice before I interviewed him to get a really good handle on what he was saying. If all you did was a term based on his work and his ideas, you'd only be scratching the surface. Yes. Because you've got the medieval history side of that. You've got each one of those individual planets. Each one of those planets has mythology attached to it. It has a metal attached to it. Mm-hmm. It has there would be the history from the time of the medieval. There is so much within those Narnia books that you could have a curriculum quite happily for more than one term, probably a year, especially for an older student where you could really dig down really deeply. And Michael has got pages and pages of references and resources and what he used to, you know, when he did this book. It's an amazing piece of work. And to read it through that lens, it brings a whole new depth to what C.S. Lewis was doing with those, just with that book.
Beautiful man. Beautiful work.
He's genius.
I read his book, Mere Christianity, I think it's called. I listened to it on audiobooks at night, over and over and over. Because he had written it for a radio broadcast. Not him reading it, sadly. But I considered myself a reasonably educated person, particularly in philosophy. And he was a man in 1945, I think it was, or 44, doing this radio broadcast. And that things that he was saying and the ideas that he was presenting were novel to me because I'd never studied Christian thought. And, man, it was like your husband's book. So amazing. And this is the point about your kids, isn't it? You can take anything. You could take a tree in the garden and just study the tree. How does the water get to the top? It's a mystery, right? Mm-hmm. How much water does it suck up? My little girl decided that she was useless at maths. And first thing I did was discover she was dyslexic. I had her home for a term, twice I've done that. She went back top of the class. And this change in how she perceived herself was so dramatic. And all it was spending one-on-one time. So she wasn't sitting in the class. Who knows the answer to this? Or sitting there stuck in the class, working on her own. I was with her, able to walk her through and over the problems. And of course, if you're dyslexic, it's, you know, an interpretation thing. And it just changed her life. Just that one-on-one. And mine. That's the other thing. It changes you, doesn't it?
Oh, it does. And because the schools can't meet the educational needs for every single child in that classroom. Mm-hmm. It's just not a possibility. So most education in the classroom is done visually.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're dyslexic, or you're more a kinesthetic type person or an audio learner, and those are often the boys, you're probably going to have a few kind of gaps. And a lot of the girls are very visual, so a lot of their class time is easier for them. But at home, you can personalize the best way that your child was created to know how to learn. Because that's the other thing. Schools are really, really good at just turning out compliant people who are ready to go off into the business world and be good little people who just work 9 to 5 and just do the right thing in life. Is that really what we want for our children? We'll let the schools do that. We don't need to do that with homeschooling.
No. So it's significant that you don't have to cover this vast array of topics to begin with when you start homeschooling. You can just grab your favorite book from childhood that you remember, or favorite person of history, and start with your child.
And know that you don't have to come up with that book list yourself or draw up the resources yourself. The wonderful thing about modern homeschooling is there is so much support and resources just out there for you. There are podcasters like myself, there are consultants, there are wonderful books and authors. And
what about the place? Do you have a place where learning occurs at home when you're homeschooling?
Oh, no. It can be wherever suits you and the child. There goes a siren past our window.
Another vex injury.
Sometimes children will sit up at the kitchen table, but more often than not, they might be sitting on the couch, you know, lying on the floor. They might want a bit of quiet space in their bedroom because the younger brother or sister's too noisy, so off they go down to their room to go and do it. So, no, they can – learning takes place anywhere. As soon as you start categorizing, it's just moving into the compliancy system, I think.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, you might – I bake bread, and I'd have the kids help me bake the bread. And learning weights and measures and percentages, because that's what bread is. And, okay, we've got 1,500 grams of flour and we want 65% water by weight. So how much water do you need? And away you go, right? And you're just teaching them to bake bread and do arithmetic and percentages and getting them to do it in their head is the next thing, isn't it?
Yes. So gotcha. You weren't just referring to that question about the physicality of where they're learning. It's within the whole house and the life you're thinking of.
Yes. Because when you picture homeschooling and you picture mum or dad, typically mum, standing up at a blackboard with a kid and a desk and a chair all on their own. Because you think it's a school when it's at home, right? Because you have a picture of the school. That's how I thought of it. And I thought, how does that work, right? And it's nothing like that whatsoever.
No. And to parents can get used to that freeing up of the way things look like gradually because That's what they were used to growing up. This was the, you've got this idea that this is how you do school. So when you bring it home, you're so, because you haven't delegated anymore, suddenly you're really, really concerned about the outcome and what you're doing. And am I doing this right? Do I do it this way? So more often than not, you are going to default to a way that's familiar to you. So it takes time, just like building any kind of muscle, to learn to, and just gradually just move into other ways of being a little bit more relaxed about your homeschool. I was just going to mention too, is that being here and seeing the art galleries and some of the housing and the
Oh my
historic
goodness.
things and hearing things, just a reminder to homeschooling families, is that the world is your classroom. Unpack that. What does that mean for you? You said you can go outside your front door and you can look at a tree and learn that. Absolutely, you can. The moment you step your foot outside the door, there's so much to learn. So start looking at everything around you of all the possibilities that you can do, and the things that you can learn from it. And there's so much that your child can learn just by walking outside the door, being in the weather, going down to the park, going down to the beach. And it doesn't matter if it's raining, just go anyway.
And isn't it a fun thing to realize that you don't have to know it? That I found a funny thing, like you go out and you think, oh, how does water get to the top of the tree? Right? And you say, well, let's go and see if we can find out. And we have the internet. It's like an encyclopedia and library at our fingertips. And you can explore it together rather than this is where we're at. And like it's not just teaching them. A couple of my daughter, older daughter, has got into just a lot of jiu-jitsu and martial arts that my kids and my older one's got into boxing. She loves it. It's amazing. She wants to get in the ring. I said, what happens if someone hits you? She said, I don't plan to be hit. It's not violent, really. She just loves the physicality of it and the training. And so I got talking about Muhammad Ali. And then I found online a documentary, all in his own words, all the film clips going right back to when he was literally a teenager, young, 15, 14. He was already a good fighter. And there he was on TV fighting. And I thought, so we're going to sit down and watch this. Because I these days you have to watch everything because my kids get upset if there's bad language, rightly so. So I have to sort of filter it all because it's terrible when you jump up and you're into something, then someone says a bad word and the kids all, oh, that's terrible. We won't get to heaven. So I have to watch it first. But this Muhammad Ali's life, that was just a magnificent greatest athlete, but it was the history of America because it went back to only whites allowed, him being refused into a restaurant, explaining that, what he was up against, the Vietnam War, what that was about. And it's all just wrapped up in learning about this man. And I thought that's a wonderful learning opportunity, isn't it? Again, just pick on one thing that interests you and pursue it. My daughter, oldest daughter, used to be, how would you say, not socially aware. She'd live in her own head. And I've got a bit of that. And I bought her How to Win Friends and Influence People, the book. I wrote a nice little inscription in it for her. She has studied that book. She's underlined it. She's made notes. Different kid. Because now she knows how to get people to like her and do what she wants, sort of thing. You know, that influence, that salesmanship, that charisma that you develop. All these things are wonderful things to explore with your kids, and they can still be going to school.
Yes, Yes.
You can homeschool even though they go to school.
There's no one right way to homeschool, and I should also emphasize too is that it doesn't have to be a lifetime thing.
No.
You could do it just for a little while or a year, just whatever is right for you and your family. There's no judging. You choose what is the best thing for your family because you're the ones answerable to God for what you do with your family.
And the role of grandparents.
Yes.
Grandparents can be amazing for kids.
Yeah, they're vital. I've done a podcast on grandparents, on how to involve them in a practical way. Some of the maybe the family things to watch out for, from the parents' perspective as well as the grandparents' perspective. So that I think is quite a helpful podcast. But yes, absolutely. To have the Nana and Granddad on board with you is a
But
gift.
even if your grandchild is off at school, mum and dad are busy, and you say, I'll look after them if you like after school on a Tuesday and a Thursday. And my mum and dad were big on raising my big boy. And what he learned of them, because they had time and patience, and they built tree huts and go-karts. And my dad taught my son to drive a car, God forbid, because at that stage my dad wasn't that great either. I remember coming the road and meeting them going the other way, and I wasn't sure who I was more scared of, my son driving or my father. But they are wonderful, wonderful, precious moments of teaching, of homeschooling, and of just sharing. And a book. A book is a wonderful way through it, isn't it?
Yes, and it doesn't matter whether your grandchildren are being homeschooled or not. The role the grandparents can have in a grandchild's life is not to be underestimated. It's not only a duty, but it's an absolute privilege to pour what you can into this little person's life that is going to have an effect and repercussions for generations down the track. To see your role as a grandparent, it's not to be, oh, to me, it is such, to be a nana is huge to me. The privilege I have of putting into my little granddaughter's life, because I can see the effect of it down into her life and into the generations. I know what my purpose is in being a grandparent to this child, and I've got a real vision for it.
How wonderful. And you're young.
It is. Pardon?
And you're young. You're
Oh, why,
young.
thank you, Rodney.
I had a great one about schooling. I've been thinking about this. My little boy, 9, it was a meme I was looking at on my phone, and it was this picture, and it had a big red pill. And he said, oh, what's that? And I said, oh, it's a red pill. What's a red pill? And I thought, it's funny he doesn't know about what a red pill is because it's the movie The Matrix. And so I started watching them because I've got to check it out whether it's okay. I'm trying to remember and Googling whether it's okay for them to watch because that's a whole turn of phrase. So we can sit down and you can learn from watching The Matrix or a great movie. Right? It doesn't have to be a book even, does it?
No, that's right.
It doesn't
It's
have to be
just
Tom Sawyer.
no, th there is so much. There is just this never-ending set of resources. And when your mind starts to learn how to see the world around you as opportunities to learn from, I never stopped doing it because it was our habit for years. And I'm going through the galleries here and I'm watching this and I'm looking at the flowers and I start to think that way. You know, What is it about this? Why is it doing it this way? Why did the painter paint like that? Why does Renoir, gosh, we just saw a whole floor of Renoirs and Monets and things at the, oh my goodness, what a privilege that was. But why did Renoir paint in all those whites and creams? I had no idea it was so beautiful. So my personal educational thing for me is I'm going to learn more about Renoir
Isn't that
because
great?
his painting was amazing. To see it
Amazing.
in the real rather than just
I
print.
have found that with paintings, that a photo of them doesn't capture it. There's something about it. There's something about the painting. I love the Bronte sisters. And Wuthering Heights would quite possibly be one of my all-time favorite books. You just reminded me I'm going to have to sit my oldest daughter down. We'll read it together. I love David Copperfield and Wuthering Heights and Anna Karenina and Middlemarch. So I got going now. So many books. But I went to where they lived in Howth. I'm trying to think what where it was. And I went there and I spent a weekend and I walked them up around where she walked, right? And I could feel Cathy and Heathcliff. And it's so powerful when you do that, isn't it? You could look up wherever you live in New Zealand, you can look up a local battlefield, a local geographical feature, go to the cemetery. Where we lived in Wellington, just up at the Karori Cemetery, was buried one of the men who he was the cook on the Endurance. That was Shackleton's trip to the South Pole or to cross Antarctica, which never made it. And everywhere you are, there's all these amazing things as a nana or a granddad just to take an interest in, and you learn and take your little kid there, and they'll never forget it, even if they don't fully grasp what is happening, it'll be a memory that'll lodge in them forever that they had with their nana or their granddad, or their big brother or aunt or uncle, or family friend. It's amazing, isn't it?
It is. And what they don't take in right then, it forms the basis of it. And the next time they're exposed to it, or the next time they see it, it starts to form layers and over the top. And just, it could be years and years down the track when little bits of the puzzle start to pop in, but they wouldn't have anywhere to sit if there wasn't that foundation there that you had already built in there with them by just taking them to that cemetery or where that connection to Shackleton was.
So the thinking about our children and our homeschooling them is that they can still be going to school, but we're still schooling them.
You're still responsible for their education, no matter
Yes.
where they are.
So you can still do the macro. You can still do the micro. I mean, I guess what I'm alluding to, thinking this through, Christine, it's not an all or nothing thing. You can always have half an hour a week and do something like this together. It's all it needs, right? And then it might grow from there to be something bigger. And you can be thinking about what it is that you're trying to achieve. But there's such a wonderful, you've got me thinking. It's like when I talk to Wally Richards about gardening, I just want to go out there and garden. But what you do is, and you inspire us to take a little bit of time with our children and or grandchildren and do a little bit of learning together.
Absolutely. Yes. I think it's good to focus on what you just said is that when we're talking about homeschooling, I mean, primarily, yes, I'm talking about how to do this when you have removed your child from a school system, but it's not the only way. I'll return to the also the thought that I just dropped in there is that you are responsible for your children's education. It's not the government, it's not the school down the road. If you've chosen to send your child to school, fine, but you're still responsible for the outcome of that. So if you want to mitigate, you can, Last year, I did a series on my podcast called, the system has failed our children, or how the system has failed our children, something like that. And my motivation in it wasn't to try and manipulate everybody to get into homeschooling. The motivation was for those who wanted to know and could see there is a problem in our education system. Okay, now what? So there were five things you can do. You can stay in school and learn how to mitigate. Some people move to a faith-based school or a private school because they might get a better result. They're probably going to get a better result. Third option, unlikely, but however, you could start your own school. Mm-hmm. Helen Houghton's very interested in doing that. Or you can homeschool. So if you're going to homeschool, now you've got all the different options. But the main motivation in putting together that series, and I interviewed, you mentioned Alwyn Paul before I interviewed him. He was really helpful. Marty Gibson from RCR, and Helen Houghton, who, could tell me some pretty shocking things about what was going on in the school. Because information is power. Once you know what it is that's actually happening, should you want your eyes opened? If you don't, that's fine. This isn't for you then. Although how you've made it through the last hour then, if that isn't what you want, I don't know. But let's just say your eyes have now been opened. What are you going to do? You can choose any one of those and just get on and do something about it, because your child's education is your responsibility.
I feel as though I've talked too much.
Oh, we've had fun.
I'll be told off, but you can send me a text at 2057. You can email me inbox@radleycheck.radio. You can ask questions of Christine Smith. She's a podcaster on homeschooling. She's a wonderful, wonderful woman. It's amazing with modern technology that we're talking to her while she sits in England. And she's going to be regular. And so her and I are going to explore all these educational opportunities that we have. I feel we need to do more on the micro, because we've got into a conversation, and we will. But I wanted to just tease out the idea that it's not an all or nothing thing, because you can do so much just now, just in this next moment. And again, I felt that talking to you of the things my kids go to school, but suddenly occurred to me the things that I could be doing with them. And I'm going to get off this interview, off this show, and I'm going to buy my oldest daughter Wuthering Heights. What a book. Christine Smith, next time we talk, you'll be home here in New Zealand.
That'd be great. I'm looking forward to it already, Rodney.
And give my very, very best to your wonderful husband, Andrew, and tell him that my Christian journey continues.
I will.
And
that
C.S. Lewis, I heard a lot about him, and mainly because I had an interest in, before it became a movie, J.R. Tolkien. I got sick of Lord of the Rings when it became a movie, funny enough, as you do, right? And I'd heard a lot about him because they were good friends. But it was only on my Christian journey that I started to read him. And what's wonderful about him is he was such a committed atheist. So he speaks to me. Because it's not like, oh, yeah, he's just telling me what he was indoctrinated in all his life. No, he worked his way there intellectually. And
the
he had
a reluctant convert.
That's what it's called. That was the book, The Reluctant Convert, The Most Reluctant Convert.
There's a recent movie. We just watched it the other week, actually. Might be under that. But we did a lot of walks around Oxford. We didn't include his time in Cambridge, but we did a lot of walks around when he,
Because you're a fan of C.S. Lewis, and your husband's apologetics is big on him.
Yes.
So it'd be amazing for you.
Yeah.
And he had a difficult life. He had a difficult life.
Yeah.
He was sent off to a horrible school, which sounded testable with it, you know, terrible thing. He went through World War One and was badly injured. His father wouldn't visit him. Father was living in Belfast and wouldn't visit him when he was home on leave in England or when he was shot up in hospital. I learned all this from the most reluctant Christian. And then he had a friend who he would stay with on leave, and his mum and sister. And his friend was killed. And he was basically adopted as a 20-year-old by his mother.
Janie Moore.
Yeah.
Mm.
And then I haven't got to the bit, but he got married, but she died of cancer after 3 years.
Yes. That's in it. Just the story in it is he wrote Surprised by Joy.
Yes.
And A Grief Observed as a result, yes, of his wife dying. There's so much to learn from the man. He's just quite remarkable. We went to the kilns while we were there. You know the house where he lived?
No, I didn't know the kilns. No, tell me.
So he and his brother and Janie Moore.
His brother was Warren, was it?
Yes, that's right. And they bought this house called the Kilns in just out of Oxford. The suburb is immaterial. It doesn't matter. But it was quite a reasonably biggish place. But next door to it, and it's still there, is this wooded area that had a big pool in it and lots of woods. But that was supposed to be where he gained a lot of inspiration for The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, and also quite possibly for, what's that first one? His first book. Oh, The Magician's Nephew. Have you read that one?
No.
Okay. No. Well, that involves woods and ponds and going in. And so we visited it, and I'll put together a podcast of it, and we just walked around with the video, and then I sat down on a chair and read some excerpts from The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe that kind of talk about the wooded times, and Andrew will put that together as a podcast. We went on walks, C.S. Lewis walks, because he was a great walker.
Yes.
And we'd go to the pubs that he went to. Honestly, Rodney, you could do a pub crawl on the pubs that they all had.
Well, it's an English thing, isn't it? Because their houses are so miserable that you have to meet friends at a pub. How wonderful, and what a wonderful world. And isn't it great? You're still a very young woman, but isn't it great that learning doesn't stop?
No. And the older I get, the more I want to know.
I know. And it just compounds and compounds and compounds, and you're never at a loss. And although I'm not as quick or, you know, reading technical stuff, I find tedious, but I've gained a wisdom that means I enjoy reading about places and history and people that I never had. So while I've lost that sort of, I can't imagine studying high-level physics any longer, or things like that, or mathematical, statistical econometrics. But at that time that I was doing that, I had no interest in reading about the life and times of C.S. Lewis or the history of World War One. And so that becomes the new thing. And again, that's that thing that you can do with your children. Yeah. We're building, and it was great to have the kids helping. Not much, but a little. I didn't make them help, other than when I really needed them. We were putting the roof on. I needed them, and they did. They did a long day putting the roofs on. But it was so much fun, as we had to figure out how you do get it square. And so you'd learn, you know, 3, 4, 5 and trigonometry and a right angle and measuring it off. And again, it's just this wonderful learning that you teach them that, and they'll never not know how to square up a building. Wonderful talking, Christine. I can't wait for you to be back and back on the show. Tell us your channel again.
Coming home info. No, that's not right. The YouTube channel is Coming Home Survive and Thrive. That will get you to me.
There you go.
If you just put in Coming Home, you're going to get soldiers coming through the airport.
Okay. Love your work, Christine. Thank you so much for sharing with us your experience and your wisdom.
Absolute pleasure. I've loved it.
And your husband's book. You're on Rally Check Radio. It's been Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. Send me text 2057. Email me at inbox@rallycheck.radio. Share your stories of teaching your children or your grandchildren. Not because you're necessarily homeschooling, but just those little insights that you have when you spend time with them and the wonder that you have with them and the lovely times that you have with them. Things that they will never, ever, ever forget, even though they're old people and they remember the time they spent with Nana. Thank you for being with us. Talk soon.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.